where Shelton comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Guest Cynthia Gibb, who's with us in studio today. She is a Westport native, grew up, went to Staples High School, and now back in her hometown, teaching what she knows, teaching what she loves at Tokay Hall, which is our youth place in Westport. I've been there many times myself. Cynthia Gibson, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show. Good morning. So nice to see you. Wait, why don't I put your mic on? That'd be good. Try and say that again. Say good morning. Good morning.
That's good morning, good. Lisa. It's so nice to be here. Oh, that was my voice from many decades ago.
Was that on Fame?
That was on Fame. Yeah. That was, I think, probably 1983 or 4.
So you were on that television show, and that was famously choreographed by Debbie Allen.
Oh, yeah. Debbie started out being the choreographer, and then the year that I joined, she, of course, was always, you know, the head of the department. But Otis Salid took over for her, and then we had Jaime Rogers, who... if you watch the original West Side Story movie, he's one of the dancers.
Is he?
In that.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Then I worked with Jaime for many years after that.
So you've always been a singer, dancer, actress, all of that.
Well, my mother was a ballerina. In fact, my mother started Westport Dance Center, which used to be run in the top of the old YMCA. So I grew up in the studio. We didn't have nannies or babysitters. So, like, she'd pack a little bag with crayons and, you know, and snacks. And I lived in the studio. So
I'm thinking at the ballet from A Chorus Line.
Yes.
There were you, literally at the ballet.
There I was. But I had a love-hate relationship with it because, you know, I'd study for a few years and then I'd say, I just want to be at home. I just want to be, like, in play dates after school. And I'd quit for a year and then I'd miss it and I'd go back. So I had a background in ballet. Due to my mother, and then modern, and then jazz once I got Fame. I was in jazz class all the time.
Did you participate in Staples High School? Was the great Al Pia your director then?
The great Al Pia was there, and he was an icon even then. But
yes.
Actually, I started working professionally when I was 14. So after school, I was in the city. So
you couldn't participate in those shows.
I only did one show, actually, and David Roth was in it.
You're kidding.
Even though I'm older than David.
I didn't know he was
David.
A Staples kid.
It was one of the summer programs, and it was a straight play. It wasn't a musical.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I just went to see Grease last Saturday night. I keep up with all that stuff. Do you keep up with all
of that?
Of
course. That's why, I saw both shows, Friday and Saturday, because all my kids are in it. So I had to see both casts.
So would I have known your kids? Or like, were they speaking parts? Or were they in the company?
About 25 of the kids in the cast study with us.
Oh, when you say your kids, I thought literally you meant your kids.
No.
Okay. But that's nice.
My kids did the Bedford acting group when they were at Bedford.
Okay.
But none of my three kids have become performers. They all have different interests.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, being a performer is you got to have a thick skin, don't you, Cynthia?
Oh, yeah. No, with all of my kids, I just encourage them to go, like, be their best selves, whatever that means.
We're chatting with Cynthia Gibbs. So, Cynthia, tell us a little bit about when you say my kids. Who are these kids and where are you teaching them?
So, I'm the proudest mama in the audience because I have the privilege of working with a lot of the singers who are not only Staples players. I work with kids from, you know, Fairfield, Wilton, Weston. And now, actually, thanks to this crazy pandemic, I've got students in 5 different states and 1 in the UK, and I'll be teaching in Italy in 2022, assuming we don't have some ridiculous
surge.
Will
you be going
again.
There, or is this more virtual? Oh, you'll be going there.
Yeah. No, I'm teaching in Rome in April, and if you want to come join us, Lisa,
I'm going to Italy at the beginning of April.
Well, you might want to come to Tuscany because we're doing a week-long vocal immersion workshop in Tuscany in September. So I'll keep you on the mailing list.
And are these strictly for kids or seriously
for any age?
Well, I
imagine the Tuscany one will mostly be adults or young adults who, you know, we don't have other commitments. But no experience necessary. I have a friend, Giovanna Gattuso, who's based in Rome, and she and I started teaching together in 2009. We met in Los Angeles, and we started talking, and we developed this friendship. And she invited me to come do her summer vocal workshop in where we hit seven cities in 3 weeks in Italy, and we did these master classes together. And
just a pretext. I mean, it looks good for the IRS you're there to teach, but really you're there to be in Italy.
Oh my goodness! If it just pays for my airfare
right.
and my food.
You're
I'm
good.
Like, I'm
there. You're good.
I'm there.
We're chatting with Cynthia Gibb, 203-333-9422. Let me ask the obvious, which is, do you need to have any raw natural talent to begin studying and learning acting and singing?
That is an excellent question, because what people assume from turning on their radio or watching America's Got Talent or whatever, that people just open their mouths and you know, this perfect on pitch, you know, tone comes out. And that's not the case at all. What is actually not understood for most of the general public is that it's a physical endeavor. And just like, you know, if you were to start ballet or any kind of physical exercise for the first time, it requires muscle memory, and it requires a balancing of the muscular system. So you've got to balance out the chest voice mechanism with the falsetto mechanism for there to be a balanced, healthy registration. Sorry, a lot of physiology in there.
That's okay.
But no, I've taught people who have no musical background whatsoever and have never sung before, and frankly, who, you know, in the first lesson can't match a pitch. Like, I'll play a note on the piano and they can't find it, so I just start with sing a note, any note, and I find it, and we go from there.
Oh, so you're teaching them. So if I sang, happy birthday to you.
Lovely.
So what pitch is that, or what key is that? What is that?
I don't have perfect pitch. I have relative pitch.
Okay, well, good enough.
People are born with perfect pitch.
Okay.
I was not so lucky. But relative pitch is when you train the ear to hear intervals. You're singing on pitch. But, for example, I had one older gentleman who wanted to retire as a lounge singer, and he had never, and he liked to croon in his car, but he had never sung before.
I love this.
And
my husband is a secret cantor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In his secret world, he's cantering.
That's
in Hebrew.
You know what? There is something very therapeutic and healing about singing. I think it's partially breath,
yeah.
And I think it's vibration. And then if it really feeds your soul, there's no reason not to do it. You know, whether
so can you teach him to sing and to
teach,
be a
I can teach
lounge
anybody
pruner?
To sing. Because you have to. Every instrument has a vibratory element and a resonating cavity. You know, if you think about a piano, for example, the strings vibrate, that establishes pitch. And then without the wooden hollow cavity around the string, you don't have any resonance. There's no, you know, there's no volume to it, and there's no tone. So we have our chords, which vibrate, and we have our skull, which is our resonating cavity. And you just have to learn how, first of all, you have to learn to sing on pitch, and pitch matching is muscle memory. And, you know, the length, tension on the chords, length of the chords, thickness of the chords is a muscle memory thing. And then you've got to know where to place the column of air. You've got to get the swirling air into the different sinus cavities.
And I thought it was just so easy. Open your mouth and you're Barbra Streisand or Judy Garland and you're done.
Well, I only have one friend who sings like an angel, Jimmy Demers, who has never studied, and I cannot figure out how he does what he does.
The gift.
Yeah. But he grew up singing with, I think, Diana Carroll. He grew up like imitating, you know, his favorite singers. And, you know, we learn by mimicking.
That's
as
all.
Well, so. But yeah, everybody.
Who was your
else
idol growing up, Cynthia Gibb? Your singing idol or dancing? Who was your idol?
Oh my goodness, I had so many.
Did you? I only had a couple. Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews. It done, and then also Barbra Streisand because it was Barbra Streisand.
Yeah, I'd say probably both of them in terms of admiring their vocal abilities. Julie Andrews had the most perfectly produced voice ever.
Right.
And actually, once I started studying vocal pedagogy, which is studying the physiology, I had a theory about how someone whose voice is so perfectly produced could possibly lose it. And it's turned out to be confirmed. Her stepdaughter is a friend of mine. And I'm also reading this really interesting book right now called The Voice. And I forget what else. It's about a guy who, you know, who joined a band for the fun of it, an adult, and lost his voice. And he was so fascinated that he could damage it so thoroughly that he decided to research it. And I'm so sorry I don't have the title and the author right now, but I'll get it back to you if you care. And he actually talks about Julie Andrews losing her voice. And when she did Victor Victoria on Broadway, you know, she was playing a man and having to sing in this deep...
I saw her in that performance.
And I'm sure she was wonderful.
She was, because she could never not be.
But you can't...
You think that that's what damaged her voice and not the surgeon?
The surgeon definitely did it, but the surgeon, she went to the surgeon because she had polyps.
Oh, I
she
see what you're saying.
She got polyps from singing incorrectly eight nights a week. And frankly, around here, because we're close to Broadway, everybody thinks that belting is so great.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Not
belting
so
belting is what did Julie Andrews.
Yeah,
person.
She was never a belter. She
no,
was
she
just
was
a clarion call canary. It, she was just like a bird.
She used her voice perfectly. Belting is actually a really incorrect technique to use. People like it because it makes them loud. But there is another way to sing with power, and it's what opera singers
So do. Cynthia Gibb, you're clearly a fountain of knowledge. If people want to take lessons with you, learn from you, where can they do that?
Our website is triplethreat.us, not .com. And,
Triple Threat.
Triple Threat, meaning singer, actor, dancer, .us.
And you teach it all?
I'm teaching, but we've got other teachers. We've got dance teachers. We've got an acting teacher who's a Juilliard grad who comes out from the city to teach for us.
And your thing is singing?
I do. I have an acting class that's a pro class where I've got people on a couple different continents, and they're my professional students.
Wow. Triplethreat.us. Cynthia Gibb, thanks for bringing your talents back to your hometown. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming right up.